Stick it in your face. It comes from the place you're living in. Stick it in your face. It comes from the place you're living in.
Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Teresa.
And I'm Pat. We're with North Coast Food Web, working to build healthy communities in our region through food and agriculture. And we're having a little silly fun this morning.
Suddenly blanked on what I was supposed to say. I'm so sorry. So we're having a crazy food talk this morning because we had our guest rescheduled. And so what we decided to do, Marianne and Pat and I, is we're going to swap some recipes. And we're going to talk about cooking.
Because we have some recipes.
We've got some recipes to swap, and we want to share them with you. And we want to talk about food because we love cooking.
So we need to warn you to get something to write with and something to write on. And I'm hopeful that at some point recipes will be up on the North Coast Food web page.
Absolutely. Marianne and I are talking about that, and we're going to put a recipe page on our North Coast Food Web website. So when we talk about recipes here on Food Talk, or if we just have great recipes we want to share, we're going to start posting them there. So that'll be a great reference point for people to go look at and get inspired and get ideas about cooking food. So ladies, what's up? What you cooking?
So the thing I'm really excited about these days is cake. And we don't bake a lot of cake at our house, but this particular one really spoke to me. I'm not a fan of fussy layer cakes with frosting and it's all really sweet. This is a beautiful one layer, kind of like a coffee cake, raspberry ricotta cake. Mm. And it is amazing. Cool thing, you can make it with frozen berries. So here you go. 1.5 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 cup of sugar, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, and 3/4 teaspoon of kosher salt. Whisk all those dry ingredients together. And then in a separate bowl, you're going to mix 3 large eggs with 1.5 cups of ricotta and 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract. You're going to fold that into the dry ingredients just until that's blended. And then pour in 1/2 cup, that's 1 stick of melted unsalted butter. Mm-hmm. Stir that all in, yeah, butter and ricotta cheese, yum.
And then just eat the batter with berries on the side.
With a really big spoon.
And then you're going to fold in about 3/4 cup of frozen raspberries, because we had it in the freezer, blackberries and blueberries worked really well,
too. So really
too.
Any berry would be...
Yeah, any kind of frozen berry would be beautiful in there. And just carefully fold in so you're not mashing the berries all over. Dump that in a pan. And you'll find when I do recipes, a lot of the recipes I like are dump into a pan. I love that approach.
Do you have to prep the pan? Do you have to butter and flour it? Or?
Yeah, you should. I actually line it with parchment and then just butter that. I'm sure it would work fine just buttering and flouring your pan. But parchment works great. Or if you're a fan of nonstick spray, you can just zhoosh that around the pan.
Is that a technical term?
Yeah, zhoosh. It's the motion that goes with it, too. That's really...
She's like shaking her hand.
Yeah, it's a technical term, right? So once you've got that in the pan, then kind of scatter another 1/4 cup of berries over the top. So you get this beautiful visual kind of golden brown. You bake this at 350 degrees for about 50 to 60 minutes. Let it cool for about 20 minutes. And then pop it out of the pan. And it is fabulous. And I know if Tom is listening this morning, he's going, yeah, and you'll be making it again when?
Is it, do you have this warm or either?
Room temperature is beautiful. Cold, the next morning for breakfast with a cup of coffee is really good because it kind of sort of has that coffee cake thing to it.
Uh-huh.
So warm or cold is delicious.
Yum.
Just plain, or you could make a little rhubarb sauce. Or rhubarb. Well, that would be good, too.
That would be good, too.
That would be good. Or raspberry sauce and drizzle over
wow.
it.
Wow.
It's beautiful.
That sounds good. That would be a nice thing to bring to a potluck.
It's great.
You know, I bet if somebody's listening and unable to, maybe driving, unable to write down recipes, I bet if they go to northcoastfoodweb.org and contact us and just say, I didn't get those, could I have those recipes, we would email them to
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. If you send an email to, it's info@northcoastfoodweb.org, and I will make sure, if you want one of the recipes we talk about this morning, absolutely. Until we get that recipe page that, up
that's
on our
interim plan.
Yeah,
right. is that we will deliver them personally via email.
What about you, Marianne? What are you up to?
Well, I'm up to making some treats for our. We're having a Foodweb is having a volunteer training this afternoon, this evening.
This evening at 6 at our building.
At 6 o'clock at 577 18th Street in downtown Astoria. And I'm in charge of treats. And because of that, I was making romesco.
Mm.
So my house smells good in a completely different way.
Yes.
Yeah.
So tell us about romesco.
Well, I really...
Do you know why it's called romesco? What is romesco?
Well, romesco is one of the... It's a Spanish sauce, and it is really a mother sauce in many ways. It's because of its versatility. And it is something that I endeavor to always have some of in my fridge because it is so... versatile. Mm-hmm. You can use it as a sauce on pasta. You can dip roasted vegetables in it. I think that roasted potatoes and romesco are one of the heavenly foods. If there are, maybe there's a list of those. It's on there. It is really wonderful as a sandwich spread.
Oh, I've made a grilled cheese with that.
Yeah, really see, good. Anything, vegetable sandwiches on up through all the meats. Mm-hmm. Fabulous. If you smear some of this on top of your meatloaf before you pop it in the oven,
That
elevates that to a real, it's really good on cornbread with some chili. I mean, there's pretty much nothing that it isn't good with. It's fabulous. And today we're going to have it, this evening we're going to have it with some baby roasted potatoes and some, I don't know what else.
You're just going to have to come to the volunteer orientation and find out.
But the other thing about it is, unlike some of the wonderful sauces that require you to roast bones and be attentive forever so long, romesco is pretty speedy and pretty easy and pretty cheap, which is fabulous. So I had a ton of tomatoes left over from something else, which is really what made me go, what am I going to do with these? So here's the basic recipe. And this is going to end up making you maybe like two and a half cups of this stuff. You need three tomatoes. Now I'm just talking about regular old slicing tomatoes. If you're going to use Roma tomatoes, which are great, you probably use four, maybe five. They're a little bit smaller. 10 cloves of garlic, or make yourself happy. I got to tell you that this recipe is me taking about, I think I probably have 8 cookbooks that have romesco in them, and they're all a little different.
Yeah.
And over time, I have gone, I'll take some of that and some of that and some of that. So this is mine, but you can mess with it.
Can I just ask for a second? So I've been thinking about this with cloves of garlic, usually 10 cloves of garlic. Well, some cloves of garlic are huge,
yes.
And some are tiny. And
yes.
So that's an interesting thing for me, too, when you look at recipes where it's in a quantity like that. I mean, is it a clove of garlic as big as your thumb or your pinky?
Well,
or as good as you like garlic.
Or as much garlic as you like.
That's,
so this is a
that's
kind of
really
you
it. Do you like
the taste.
Garlic? And in this particular recipe, I would always err on the side of more. So if you had a head of garlic that had a lot of small cloves, I'd do more than 10.
Yeah.
So it's a rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. It's a suggestion. The whole recipe is just a suggestion. So we got 3 tomatoes, 10 cloves of garlic, a couple of slices of stale bread, and it needs to be good bread, like crusty bread, not
airy bread.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about brands, but, you know, not the spongy stuff that you can wad up into a little dough ball, not that.
That should be a test. If you can do that with your bread, don't use it.
Then it is actually a sculpting medium and not a food. And then it's got nuts in it. And traditionally, romesco is a combination of almonds and, oh, we call them hazelnuts now, but they're filberts, right? We know they're filberts. But you can also substitute pine nuts for some of that. I've done it with all almonds. I love the almond thing. Mm. Anyway, you're going to use a half a cup of whole almonds, skin on everything, and a half a cup of filberts or pine nuts, or I've used pecans are a little too sweet. I tried that, a little too sweet. Mm.
Have you tried walnuts?
I have tried walnuts, and walnuts are great in there.
Okay.
So make yourself happy about that other half cup of nuts, or if you want, just use a cup of almonds. You need a cup of nuts, however you go about it. And you need at least half of it to be almonds, or else it's not going to taste anything like it's supposed to taste. And then you need bell pepper, and it needs to be red, yellow, or orange as opposed to green. The greens have that real... very specific flavor that kind of overwhelms everything. So one of the pretty colored bell peppers. and then a half a tablespoon, which would be, what, 1.5 teaspoons, same difference, however you want to go about that. You're going to wind up with a tablespoon of vinegar, and I split it between red wine vinegar and sherry vinegar. Mm. I like that combination. A teaspoon of smoked paprika, smoked very key for this one. A pinch of cayenne, and you are in charge of how big the pinch is. A pinch of salt. You're going to adjust the seasoning later, but you got a lot of stuff going on in here, so I would say just a pinch of salt to start. And then quarters of a cup of olive oil. And so those are your ingredients, and then the process is so simple. 450-degree oven. You're going to roast the tomatoes, the garlic, the bread, the nuts, and the pepper. Takes about 15 minutes till everything's roasted. You're going to have to turn them periodically as they blacken. And then you're going to put everything, all of that stuff, in the food processor. Pulse it to break it up a little bit. Add your vinegars, oil, paprika, cayenne, and salt. Blend until smooth. Taste it. If you want more salt, go for it. Make it ahead so it can sit at least some hours, and overnight even better. And you're set.
Use it liberally.
Really critical there, right? Not to skip the step of roasting all those delicious veggies.
You must
that
roast.
That really is what.
And I've seen recipes where you just pan sear all that stuff. And I bet that makes a really good sauce, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
So the roasting, I think, is really key. And so simple.
Cooking method.
So simple. I mean, the cooking is put everything in a pan in the oven for a while and then throw it in your food processor. So really...
Could you do it in a blender, do you think, if you didn't have a food processor?
I think that you could absolutely do it in a blender. And often what I do is process this stuff and then drizzle the oil in so that... Because sometimes you're... needing a little more, sometimes you're needing a little less. Mm-hmm. It depends on what you're going to use this sauce for, how thick you want it. Anyway, that's Romesco.
Whoa.
Well, and one of the things I love about any kind of a sauce like that you can make, what'd you say this makes, like 2.5 cups or something?
Yeah, right around.
Putting that in the refrigerator in a jar, and then all during the week, you've got this beautiful thing that's already made, and you can just take it out and add a little bit to whatever you've got going on. And it just enhances whatever you're cooking.
It is.
Like
it's
that chicken
sauce.
Breast that you just pulled out of the oven.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you think that would freeze? I mean, if you put it in, or would it not be the same? I always try to think about, like, how would you save
I'm
it?
I'm thinking that if you were going to freeze it, this might be an experiment that someone else is going to try and tell us. I would freeze it without adding the oil to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
then... So, like, once you've roasted it, freeze it, and then...
Yeah, roast it, blend it, and then put it... then freeze it, and then thaw it out, and when it's up to room temp, emulsify it with the oil. I don't think it's going to freeze that well with oil in it.
No.
I wouldn't do the oil. I'm thinking, like, oh, okay, without the oil, freeze it. I'm a big fan of freezing things in small portions, like little tablespoon dollops or ice cube trays or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I'm wondering, freezing ice cube tray of that and then taking out one or two,
I think,
or whatever,
it would be great.
Just a little bit.
And actually, that would, just that alone, without the oil, if you put that into a soup broth, that would be killer.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe.
Just really kick it up a notch or two. I always think about those things because there's times of year I'm heading into, like, crazy farm season, and cooking is so challenging. The irony of, like, you know, having this amazing food that
you have this abundance of food.
And I'm eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich because that's all I can cook. But So I'm really trying to train myself in the wintertime to like, or, you know, at the end of the season, like make stuff and have it in the freezer, or preserve it or dry it or something like that, so that making a healthy, delicious meal when things are crazy isn't so complicated.
I got to say, Teresa, the tomato powder.
Yeah, tomato powder is transformative. Yeah.
We were talking about that this morning.
That stuff is so good. Just crazy.
So what Marianne's
good.
Talking it's like about magic is dust. It's drying tomatoes in season. So basically using a dehydrator to dry tomatoes. And we had a lot of great tomatoes that came out of our hoop house last summer. Dry, I mean, they need to be really brittle dry. And then you basically grind them up in a coffee grinder till they make a powder. And the challenge that I found is that it does kind of reabsorb some moisture, so the powder doesn't stay super powdery. You kind of have
it clumps up, and clumps. It's perfectly normal.
But it's this incredibly intense
it's
tomato
so
flavor.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And you can sprinkle. I've sprinkled it on scrambled eggs. I put it on top of cornbread before I bake it. I've put it in quiches. I've added it to soups as like a flavor enhancer or sauces or something.
Deviled eggs.
It's almost
great
like I kind
so
of
many places.
Use it almost like where I would use paprika in uh-huh. some ways.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, different, of course, but yeah.
We use tomato powder in our taco seasoning. It's one of
oh,
the things
there you
that
go.
Just, it gives such a depth to things.
Yeah.
It's great.
So
Good stuff.
It's funny. Okay, so we need to take a break, and I need to let you know that we're listening to KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and we are streaming live on the web at coastradio.org, and you can listen on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. And if you're just joining us, Marianne and Pat and I are talking recipes. We're swapping recipes. And here's the hilarious thing, because the recipe I wanted to share also involves tomatoes. And it's April. What are we talking about tomatoes for? But I think part of it is, I mean, I just am excited about them. And then they are something that preserves well. I mean, you can can them, you can freeze them. And I've got a freezer full of tomatoes still that pretty much
they
we just like.
Freeze beautifully.
Just, I mean, I roasted some last year. I did some great sauce that was like roasted tomatoes and onions and garlic tossed in a little olive oil, whack the pan, and some basil if I had it, or not basil if not, a little salt and pepper, and then just put those in the oven, roasted them for a while, and then whizzed them up, and then just froze bags of that. It's an amazing sauce.
Ooh.
If you really wanted to, you could run it through a food mill and get
or
all
you could just leave them
out, but
kind of the whole state and just throw them in a baggie and
yeah.
put them in the freezer
and
voila dinner.
That would be great, but then at a certain point I ran out of time to even do the roasting thing.
Yeah.
And so it was just like whizzing up whole tomatoes, whacking them in a bag. And so I've got some still. And I was thinking about recipes that I often get asked for. And a lot sometimes we'll have, you know, work parties at the farm. We'll have a lot of people over. And I'm trying to feed a lot of people. And sometimes I'm trying to feed a lot of people like out of my pantry because I won't have realized that I need to cook for a crowd. And I have this soup that I make, and every time I make it, I get asked for the recipe, and it's hilarious. And I know whether it's because it's nostalgic, but it's basically like cream of tomato soup, and it's out of Deborah Madison's Vegetable Soups book. And if you don't have this book, you really should, because I've never made a bad soup out of this book. Every soup I've made is really good, and this is a super simple recipe. And you can add milk to it if you want. I usually end up leaving it milk free because I'm never quite sure if I'm going to have vegans or someone who's dairy lactose intolerant. Sometimes I've added coconut milk to it if you want a little cream, or I'll have a little yogurt on the side, plain yogurt, and someone can stir that into their soup if you want. But you could just have it be totally just tomato soup, and it's great. So I'm going to tell you what you do. And the cool thing about it is that a lot of times this is stuff that you have on hand, and it can use canned tomatoes as well.
Good quality canned tomatoes.
Good quality canned tomatoes if you can, though.
Sub in great.
Absolutely. So here's what you do. And this makes about 6 cups. I think I probably double this on a regular basis. And
because you want to cook once and eat twice if you're...
Yeah. And if I was really good, I would triple it or quadruple it and freeze some. But I don't always do that. So anyway, you take 2.5 tablespoons of butter, a small onion chopped, 1 celery rib chopped. And I will say, I have used some of like the oldest, saddest, limpest celery with the leaves still attached, the things that are like you find in the back of your vegetable crisper. So you can use that celery flavor and chop that up and done it. I don't always do that, but sometimes. But anyway, so that works too. It doesn't have to be perfect.
In other words, vegetables don't have to be perfect to make good soup.
Also, here's the thing. This calls for, and Pat's probably going to wince a little bit, but it's 1.5 teaspoons of dried basil. And basil doesn't, dried basil is a totally different animal than fresh basil. Yep. And I've used frozen fresh basil, and that's been great too. I've used fresh basil in season. I've also used dried basil, and sometimes I've used dried marjoram, and sometimes I've totally left it out because I just don't have it. And it's all okay.
They and all if you're putting good. It at the beginning, dried is great.
Yeah. So 1.5 teaspoons dried basil, a pinch of ground cloves. And this really makes a difference. I don't know what it is, but the ground cloves really makes this pop. A couple of tablespoons of flour, 2 15-ounce cans of diced tomatoes in puree or juice, a pinch of baking soda. And the baking soda is apparently, if you're going to add the cream to it, I think it's supposed, or the milk, it's supposed to help it not curdle or something like that. So sometimes I leave it out, sometimes I add it in. 2.5 cups of vegetable stock or water, and I've made it both with vegetable stock and water, and it's delicious either way. 1.5 cups of milk if you're going to add it, sea salt, freshly ground pepper, and tomato paste if needed. And that's just like if you need more flavor or whatever. And sometimes I've just put in dried tomatoes, like a handful of dried tomatoes if I felt like it needed more punch. So here's what you do. You melt the butter in a soup pot over medium heat, and you add the onion, celery, basil, and cloves, and you cook that, stirring occasionally, until the onion goes limp, which, as she says, is about 5 minutes, and that sometimes that takes 10. I don't know. I just do that while I'm doing other things. And then you stir in the flour, and then you add the tomatoes, the baking soda, and the stock, and you bring all of that to a boil, and you lower the heat, and you simmer it partially covered for 20 minutes. And then you let it cool briefly and you puree it in a blender until smooth. Or I use the immersion blenders.
Yeah.
And then you can, at that point, if you want, you can reheat it and or like let it cool. I've stuck that in the fridge. I've made it the day before. I've frozen it at that point. And really, it's pretty much done at that point. If you want to add the milk, you would add it towards the end, like kind of right before you're serving it. And then because it calls for 1.5 cups of milk, if you're not adding the milk, I add more stock or more water, kind of to taste for like the thickness that you like it.
Beautiful.
This is really awesome with grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yes. Oh, man. You got to have grilled cheese with tomato
or
soup.
Or just a really good bread with, you know, stuff. Yum. Or and a salad of like fresh greens. It makes a really great meal, and it's very comforting. It's really nostalgic, I think, for people who grew up eating, you know, canned tomato soup.
Yeah. You can have this soup in a mug. I always have a special fondness for soup you can have in a mug, and you don't need a spoon. Yeah. I love that.
And it's great. It's not a complicated recipe. It's really easy to make.
So a couple of tips that I'd love to throw in there that help with recipes like this. You know, as I said, I love to have little bits of things in the freezer, and tomato paste is one of those things, because you open a can of tomato paste or a jar of tomato paste, however you buy it, you use a tablespoon, then you have all this left. You put it in the fridge. So I scoop out tablespoons of that, put it on a baking sheet, stick it in the freezer till they freeze, and then throw those tablespoons of tomato paste in a baggie. And when you need a tablespoon of tomato paste, boom, you just pull one of those little things out, throw it in the soup pot. It works great.
That's such a great idea.
I love that.
Brilliant.
I love that tip.
I have got to tell Packy that, because I find way too many cans of really disgusting tomato paste in our fridge.
You can do it with chipotle chilies too, the ones that are packed in adobo sauce.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you open the can, you use one or two of the chipotle chilies and a little bit of the sauce, and then you're, you can do the same thing with those. It works great. The other thing I want to say is about vegetable stock, because a lot of the vegetable stock that you can buy in the grocery store is kind of like tinny or minerally or
salty.
Just
sometimes it's
salty.
Really sweet, too sweet.
Yeah, too sweet. Mm-hmm. Weird flavors. But if you get in the habit of saving trimmings from vegetables, you know, the ratty piece of celery or the ends of the asparagus that you've snapped off, onion peels, especially if you're, you know where your onions are coming from and they're not sprayed, any of the scraps from vegetables, and throw those things in a baggie or a container in the freezer and just make your own vegetable stock, throwing all those things in some water and throw some seasoning in there, and you'll get really a lovely flavored vegetable broth that is so much better
It's so much
And then that's also
better.
Something that you can freeze. I've made those in a like in a crock pot if I've just not had time or I just kind of want to be, I need to leave the house and go away, throw all of my scraps into a crock pot, pour a bunch of water over it, and let it just be on low all day, and then I'll strain it at night. And it's a great way to not like use up those scraps, not have things go to waste.
Yep.
And what you have left that you strain out is like almost composted already.
Yeah, basically. There you go.
goes so right into the compost.
But you can also control the salt. I think what's great about that is you can control the salt and the flavor.
And it tastes like something as opposed to nothing or something unidentifiable. If you have a ton of, I mean, it's hard to do better French onion soup than to make your own onion stock out of all those cut off ends of onions and the, you know, all the parts of the onion that you didn't use when you were whatever to make onion stock and then make your soups. It's, I think, even better than beef or veal stock, which would be the classic way to do onion soup.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just a good vegetable stock is so flexible and really can get you a long way towards having a delicious meal. And it will really kick something like a soup, a homemade soup, up.
So good.
So, yeah, I know.
We used to have, well, as I say this out loud, I realize now that the reason we used to do this is because there was somebody home cooking all day long. But there used to always be a stock pot, you know, on the back burner of the stove, and you just kept throwing stuff in and ladling stuff out. So,
It's, I think what a big thing that I've learned is that cooking delicious meals doesn't have to be super complicated, and it doesn't have to take a long time. That sometimes it's just combining the right ingredients. It can go fast. But you can have a really wonderful meal. I mean, all of these things, none of these are complicated recipes, but they're really flavorful and wonderful. And
well, and anytime you can cook, I'm a huge fan. I'll say it over and over again. Anytime you can cook once and eat two or three or four times, that's a really wonderful thing. So if you're taking the time to cook a big pot of soup, make it an even bigger pot of soup and put some in the freezer.
Yeah, because there's some nights when you just don't feel like cooking.
That's right.
Really don't feel like cooking.
You know, chicken soup in the freezer is, I can make that look like a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah, exactly. That's the great thing about
it's
something
true.
You can pull
I know. Just get in the kitchen every once in a while and try and cook up some stuff. And it's, I think it's just a wonderful way. And I'm just thinking about, I'm so excited for cooking classes coming up from FoodWeb this year.
We are so close.
We are super close to our kitchen.
Everybody keep your eyes open because there will be, Teresa will be telling all of you about these as we get them firmed up. We're nailing down the curriculum this week, and we're going to be, hopefully our kitchen will be done very soon.
No, I do just want to remind people, so we're having a volunteer orientation. If you're interested in local food, if you want to volunteer, get involved in helping promote local food, getting involved with cooking classes, helping out at farmers market, helping with, you know, community garden stuff. I don't know. There's lots of different ways that you can help promote local food and help more people connect with fresh local food. Tonight,
we need pie bakers or people who just want to learn to bake pie.
Absolutely. At 6 p.m. at the North Coast Food Web building, which is at 577 18th Street in Astoria, we're having a little volunteer orientation. We'll be talking about our projects, what we do, how to get involved. And then I believe Jen Rasmussen has it planned for afterwards. We're going to put some plants in the ground. We have a little garden space out front.
Our new garden that used to have two of the saddest shrubs in the whole world, and it is going to start growing food.
Absolutely. So that's going to be a great thing. So hopefully you can come out and join us. If not, we're going to do more of these volunteer orientations throughout the year. So lots of different ways to get you connected to local food. And
we will almost always feed you when you come. Something.
That's the great thing about this group.
I know.
There's always food.
And we love to talk about recipes. And clearly, because this morning was awesome. Now I'm really hungry.
And as a reminder on the recipes, if you want to get, if one of those really captivated your attention and you want to get the recipe quick, you can email us at info@northcoastfoodweb.org. And we'll shoot it out to you, and they will be soon posted on the North Coast Food Web website.
We'll have a recipe page. And also, that info@northcoastfoodweb.org is a way for you to say, I wish you'd talk about this on Food Talk, or next time you have a recipe show, I would love to have a good recipe for whatever you fill in the blank. That's the way to get a hold of us and let us know what you're thinking, what you'd like.
Absolutely. Gosh, it's 9:59.
It is not.
We can talk about food.
So we got to wrap this up.
And So thanks for listening today. And thanks to our engineer, Marianne, and for sharing that great Romesco recipe. I can't wait to make that. Thanks to Luke and Katie for our theme song. And thanks for joining us today for fresh conversations about food on the North Coast.
Stick it in your face. It comes from the place you're in.
Support for Food Talk comes in part from the Astoria Co-op, dedicated to building community through food, featuring local, natural, and organic groceries and produce. All shoppers welcome 7 days a week at 14th and Exchange and astoria.coop.
Stay tuned for Lost Highways with John Stevenson coming up in just a few seconds. But first, NPR News headlines coming your way on Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, KTCB 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon, streaming live at coastradio.org and available on your mobile device using the TuneIn app.